This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
in one of the most closely watched electoral races on the African continent, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta will face off Tuesday against longtime rival Raila Odinga. The killing of a key election official a week before the vote has elevated concerns after a contentious campaign period.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, Mozambique's president and the leader of the opposition meet to try to bring peace to the country, and thousands of protesters marched on parliament to demand that their legislators oust President Jacob Zuma in tomorrow's no-confidence vote.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: in one of the most closely watched electoral races on the continent, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta will face off tomorrow against longtime rival Raila Odinga. The recent killing of a key election official has raised concerns after a contentious campaign period. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The race between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga is projected to be tight. Some, like Kenyan political writer and commentator Barack Maluka, argue the candidates haven't stopped campaigning since the last election in 2013 that also pitted them against each other.
So there's a sense in which the elections have occupied the collective national consciousness of the Kenyan citizen and the voter. So it's a big deal.
But there is more than the presidency on the ballot. Research analyst Tom Wolf believes that the 47 county races are generating at least as much buzz as the presidential contest. Definitely more so than in 2013, he says.
But many Kenyans, and we've seen this in our polling data, did not fully understand or appreciate just how much power or responsibility was being devolved from the center to the regions through the counties. So if you go and travel around the counties now, you will see as much, if not more, campaign activity that's associated directly for the contest for governor as there is for the presidency.
The organization of the polls has been a source of tension for more than a year, sparking opposition protests and several court battles. Complicating matters is the recent killing of the Electoral Commission's technology chief, Chris Masando, whose autopsy results show he was tortured and strangled. Masando was responsible for the electronic voter identification and vote transmission systems.
There's every possibility of people tying that passing on to the elections and to the possibility that there could be foul play. Remember, we are not saying that there's definitively anything like that, but the context opens up space for that kind of speculation.
And that hasn't been the only drama in the home stretch of Kenya's campaign season. There was a break-in at the country home of the vice president on July 29th. On Friday evening, the opposition claims that men in plain clothes raided one of its offices, as well as taking two of its foreign electoral advisors, an American and a Canadian, from their apartments. They were deported Saturday. Fake news has also been a problem, with Geo poll results suggesting that 90% of respondents had seen false or inaccurate information around the elections, and 87% viewed this information as deliberately false. For at least a week, people have been leaving Nairobi and other towns for their home villages, some for voting purposes and others for fear of violence. Lane Bunkers is the country representative for Catholic Relief Services in Kenya. He says that against the backdrop of the election season, Kenyans are still suffering from problems resulting from a regional drought emergency, like food insecurity and high food prices.
There's a lot of serious challenges facing the people of this country, so I'm hoping for a strong outcome with elected politicians who will take their job seriously and really perform for the people who are electing them.
Youth took to the streets of Eldoret Friday to march for peace. Kenya's Rift Valley region was the epicenter of the post-election violence in 2007 and 2008 that killed more than 1,000 people and displaced over 500,000. Kenyans hope these elections will be violence-free. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Uganda Red Cross is registering Kenyans who have fled their country in anticipation of violence surrounding tomorrow's elections. The Red Cross says it plans to set up receiving sites at the border towns of Busoya and Tororo. Halima Atumani files from Kampala.
The Uganda Red Cross says it has received and seen a number of Kenyans who crossed the border, fearing for their safety. Bob Akankwasa is its director of disaster risk management.
We've seen a couple of hundreds coming through. We are yet to verify their true nationalities and where they are exactly moving in. But these are still the commercial population movement, people who have the capacities and abilities to handle their situations. But we haven't seen a significant number that may need significant assistance.
The Uganda Red Cross says so far it has handled 10 families in need of support, but expects even more once the voting is over.
We are making our preparation activities around Busia and Malaba points, but all our branches across the eastern border are on the alert because some of these people move because they have relatives. As people vote, that's when they tend to move when they are finished.
For at least a week now, people are reported to be leaving Nairobi and other towns for their home villages, some for voting purposes and others because of potential post-election violence. Opinion polls predict a very close race between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga. It is still not clear how many people are fleeing for fear of trouble, but the streets of many towns are reported to be empty ahead of the election. Kenyans are also reported to have stocked up on items like milk, cooking oil, maize flour and other essential items. The Uganda Police Force has also stepped up security at the border. Asan Kasinje is a police spokesman.
We continue to take all considerable measures to ensure that all people crossing the borders are safe and secure. Yesterday, we received about 30 people here in Kampala across the border. And even the past 1 week, we have been receiving Ugandans coming back.
For many Kenyans, reports of anticipated trouble trigger memories of the 2007 election violence, in which more than 1,000 people were killed and 500,000 others fled their homes. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
In South Africa, thousands of protesters marched on Parliament today. They demanded their legislators vote President Jacob Zuma out of office in tomorrow's first ever vote of no confidence. From Johannesburg, Anita Powell reports.
Tuesday's vote will be the eighth parliamentary motion that seeks to remove the increasingly unpopular and scandal-plagued President Jacob Zuma. Unlike the previous votes, where the ruling African National Congress used its comfortable majority to publicly support its leader, this vote will be cast in secret. It took National Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete 46 days to decide. She then spent 12 minutes reading her carefully worded ruling.
I therefore determine that voting on the motion of no confidence in the President on the 8th of August 2017 will be by secret ballot.
Opposition parties had asked for the ballot to be held in secret in a bid to embolden critics within the famously disciplined ANC to turn against their leader. Several high-profile party stalwarts, including the former finance minister, whom Zuma fired in March, have publicly called on him to step down. The unpopular decision to fire Pravin Gordhan was immediately followed by a downgrade of South Africa's credit rating to junk status. Meanwhile, thousands of South Africans made no secret of their wishes as they took to the streets to defend or oppose Zuma. On Monday, thousands of Zuma critics marched outside Parliament in Cape Town to demand his ouster. A pro-Zuma protest is planned for Tuesday. Also Monday, in the city of Durban, in Zuma's home province, dozens of traditional leaders and faith leaders gathered to appeal to God to save the president. This is Bishop T.B. Mkhubo of the National Interfaith Council of South Africa.
We can't afford now more scandals in this country. So people, they must let the President Zuma finish the term and then move away and they get the new. Because if you can just remove the president now, by these processes, it can happen before that president that is coming. They are going to do this. It's going to be a trend. So we have to stop the trend because the trend might take the country into disrepute.
Some Zuma critics say the nation is already there, mired in long-simmering corruption scandals that put the president at the center. Most recently, some 100,000 leaked emails and documents pointed to improper dealings between the president and a wealthy family. Activist Vuyiseka Dubula of the Unite Behind Coalition spoke to VOA before she led Monday's march in Cape Town.
The current president has no interest in addressing our social issues. Instead, we're seeing state resources going to people's pockets.
If the motion against Zuma succeeds, he and his entire cabinet will have to step down. But whether that happens remains a numbers game. In order for the motion to pass in the 400-member parliament, all 151 opposition representatives will have to vote against him, along with 50 ANC members. Anita Paul, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Huhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Kenyans vote for a president tomorrow. Mozambique's president and the leader of the opposition meet to try to bring peace to the country. And thousands of South African protesters marched on parliament to demand their legislators vote President Jacob Zuma out in tomorrow's first ever secret vote of no confidence. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Authorities say a local feud may be behind yesterday's attack in a church in southeastern Nigeria that left at least 11 people dead and 18 wounded. One, possibly two, gunmen opened fire at St. Philip's Catholic Church in Ozubulu near the city of Onitsha around 6 in the morning. Authorities say the attack in Anambra State was carried out by a lone gunman, but some witnesses say there were at least two. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari condemned the attack, calling it an appalling crime and saying there is no justification whatsoever to attack a church.
A Truth and Reconciliation Commission will begin taking testimony soon in the Gambia. The nation's justice minister has invited anyone who was allegedly abused or detained by the regime of former ruler Yahya Jammeh to come forward and tell their stories. The minister made the call over the weekend at the launch of the National Consultation on the Truth, Reconciliation and Repatriation Commission. Reporter Pandera Mbai has more on the story.
Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu said Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparation Commission, TRC, will create an impartial historical record of violations and abuses of human rights from July of 1994 to January 2017. He said it will also promote healing and respond to the needs of the victims of human rights violations and other offences. The commission will recommend whether amnesty should be granted to those linked to crimes against the Gambian people. President Adama Barrow will make the final decision. Tambedu said the TRC will help consolidate Gambia's democratic process.
Well, this is a huge step towards the strengthening of our newfound democracy. We are engaging in these consultations to show the Gambian people that their voices make a difference, that their voices matter.
The Justice Minister said the Commission will grant reparations to victims in appropriate cases. He said it will also prevent the violations of human rights. Amadou Sakre Jane represents the group calling itself the victims of dictator Yahya Jammeh's misrule.
It was very reassuring to hear the minister respond to some of our concerns to say that reparations are part of this and that perpetrators of gross human rights violations would be brought to book.
Yahya Jammeh is living in exile in Equatorial Guinea after being forced to step down last December after losing the election to Barrow. Ajimami Sise is among those who may testify before the TRC. Her Gambian-American son was allegedly abducted by Jammeh's guards during a visit to the Gambia in 2013. He has not been seen since. She says he wants Jammeh and his officials to face justice. She says she is calling on Gambians, especially victims of Dictator Yahya Jammeh's rule, to come out and relate their stories to the commission. She says victims should not be ashamed to relate their stories. She says genuine reconciliation can only take place if perpetrators of crime are willing to admit their actions against Gambians. Dr. Henry Carroll, chairman of Gambia's Law Reform Commission, talked about the significance of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
It is of paramount importance in the lives of Gambians because it opens up a new chapter and closes an old one. And there's a transition between these two periods, which we are now going through right now. As I said, we are now on the threshold of a third republic. And as we go to the third republic, we have to heal the wounds of the past.
Dr. Carroll said healing past wounds requires an objective approach. He cautioned that people linked to crimes should not be prejudged. He said all persons are presumed innocent until proven guilty by a court of law. Gambian human rights lawyer Emmanuel Jew said it is time for Gambians to take responsibility for enabling Jammeh.
The Gambians have been complicit and complacent. You see, Jammeh for 22 years did what he did. He didn't do it alone. It was with the connivance of Gambians. Gambians enabled Jammeh. Gambians from all walks of life, from religious leaders to professionals, civil servants.
You've said in order to avoid a repeat of authoritative rule, Gambians must respect press freedom, human rights, and good governance. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by Reporting.
In Zimbabwe, conservation farming is being widely encouraged as a sustainable way of producing food, especially with changing global weather conditions. Reporter Kudzazi Zvinavashi explores conservation farming and its adoption in Zimbabwe.
Over the past 7 years, local non-governmental organizations and other stakeholders have been preaching conservation farming as a sort of gospel to farmers. Dr. Leonard Unganai, an expert climatologist who works with Oxfam, he explains how it works.
So the whole idea behind climate conservation farming is that it has to observe three principles. The first one is that there has to be minimum soil disturbance. Then the second aspect is that there has to be crop rotation within the farming system. And then the third aspect has to do with the use of a mulch, basically to conserve soil moisture. The uptake actually has been fairly good, particularly in rural communities where draft power is also a constraint.
Traditionally, farming has used animal drawn plows to cultivate the land. Christine Mudzingwa is a 33-year-old farmer in Buhera South, one of the driest and hottest areas in the country, located in eastern Zimbabwe. She shares her experience with conservation farming.
We are doing conservation farming here in Buhera South. I've been doing it for 6 years before working with Oxfam. My harvest has increased from the time I started using conservation farming.
As noble as conservation farming sounds, this means farmers have to let go of the traditional way of producing food, one that has been passed down from one generation to the next. Traimo Kwaramba is a farmer in Masingo. He explains why he has decided not to adopt the new method of farming.
Conservation farming, especially what we are practicing here in Zimbabwe, where we are encouraged to use hoes and to actually not use heavy machinery, it's labor intensive. You need a lot of people to till the land because you are using hoes and this is very difficult. So you can only do it at a lower level. As a farmer myself, this is one of the farming methods that I've left behind because for me it was not sustainable.
Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union Chairman Wanda Chabikwa says, despite its low rate of popularity, they are advocating for the wide uptake of the farming technique.
Our manufacturers of farming equipment, we now have zero tillage planters. Some farmers have adopted. It's a process where we are encouraging every farmer to adopt conservation agriculture. Efforts are there for farmers to learn, although adaptation will take its own time, but we are aware and something is being done.
Unganai says Crop rotation in conservation farming has been a challenge, as majority farmers have small tracts of land, but they have been intercropping or planting leguminous plants such as groundnuts and beans between their main crops. Mixing the crops has helped sustain the soil and boost yields. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
A $24,000 reward has been posted for information leading to the arrest or conviction of suspects in Saturday's attack of a mosque in the U.S. state of Minnesota. The explosion in the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in suburban Minneapolis shattered windows and damaged the room where worshippers were getting ready for morning prayers. The Associated Press reports no one was hurt in the blast, which occurred at 5 a.m. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, says the explosion was caused by an improvised device that was thrown through a window. The FBI is trying to determine whether the attack was a hate crime. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton called it an act of terrorism.
Nearly 200 migrants stormed a border post today located between Morocco and the Spanish territorial enclave of Ceuta. AFP reports the sub-Saharan migrants ran past guards around 5 o'clock in the morning, reaching Spanish soil. Migrants hope that once they reach Ceuta, they'll be able to travel to mainland Europe. Ceuta and another Spanish enclave called Melilla on Morocco's northern border have the European Union's only land borders with Africa. In other migrant news, the Associated Press reports Libya's Coast Guard and naval vessels intercepted a boat loaded with more than 100 migrants yesterday. The migrants were returned to Tripoli and placed in a detention center under a new operation to intercept people smugglers and curb the migrant flow to Europe. Italian Navy vessels are now operating in Libyan waters.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. True face. NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.